Blog Talk Radio.
Nalema kulila misozi, nikayanga na banja latu. Kupadwa tinabadwa mushe, koma lelo lipazulika. Nikale tinakalapo kondwela, lelo heka, tutikumbukila kweta chokela. Amai kubutika mutima, koma zoti tazisoa. Nimaona misozi masomwake, nimavuto abale nimavuto. Kumwanako kuipirendi kuchitoko na mumu follow hamama inei njiwanda zota nizi taeza talema na yuma pempelo atika pena siku lina azati kumbukila oye chifu kwa lelo bantu bonse basoweza ulemu atate imwe atate imwe.
Good morning and welcome to Zambia Blog Talk Radio. It's February 20th, 2016. The month is almost coming to an end. We do thank you for joining us from wherever you are listening us from. Good afternoon, Europe. Good evening, Zambia. I believe it's 1800 hours there. And good evening, Australia and all the Pacific area. And good morning, America, and welcome to the show. This morning, we are going to be discussing international trade. One of the things that really has baffled me over the years, Dr. Kalonde and Priscilla, who have called in, is how and why do we insist on trading with America? That's the question that I want our guest to address. Africa has formed and created a lot of regional or cooperation or regions of West African Economic. I can't remember the full name. We have SADC, Southern Africa Development Corporation. We have COMESA. We have the East African. I remember growing up, there used to be East African Airways and all those things, stuff like that. So we're going to talk about that. As we wait to connect our guest who's joining us from Namibia, I just want us to give us an insight into issues to do with legalities, political arrangements, and all those things, and why these things don't seem to be performing the way they are supposed to be performing, and the initial reason why they were created. Okay, Dr. Kalonde, good morning. I think we should be 6-3, is it, Brother Alan? Okay. Hi, Priscilla.
Good morning, good morning, good morning.
You have an echo on your phone. Are we on speaker?
Yeah, let me take you off.
Yeah, I think I have my good friend here and brother joining us also from the D.C. area. Dr. Kasonso, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing good. I'm glad you called in. I think this should be a very interesting discussion. I really want us to understand why those regional corporation, what do they call them, the SADC, the COMESA, the ECOWAS, East Africa things, why they have not worked or performed to their intended expectations. And the other question I also want to address is, why does Africa insist on doing business with America? Can't they trade between themselves? I mean, America makes it complicated to do business with it. So why are you insisting on working with somebody who makes the rules so hard? Okay? That's what I want us to understand. And okay, we are going to go to join our guest here. Joining us from the great nation of Namibia is Ms. Stacy Sousa. She's an international trade lawyer by qualification, both an undergraduate and a master's degree in those categories. Stacy, good evening.
Good evening, Nathan. How are you?
Doing good. How's your weekend?
Thank you. It's going well.
Excellent. All right. Thanks for joining us again on Zambia Block Talk Radio. Stacy was on Zambia Block Talk Radio, I believe, last week on Wednesday. She was discussing things to do with gifting with Matilda on Ichalo Cheso. Like I've said, by qualification, Stacy is an international trade lawyer, both undergraduate and graduate education, and she is currently a PhD student. Our discussion today, Tracy, is on international trade, like you and I started a little bit behind the scenes during the week. To start with, let me just ask this question. When we say or when we hear the term international trade, what are we saying? What does that mean?
Right. Just very quickly, thank you again for having me on your show. It is such an honor and obviously very interesting for me because we're discussing something I'm very passionate about. In answer to your question, generally when you think about international trade, it is the exchange of goods and services between nations, between continents that goes outside their domestic ability. So for instance, I'll give an example of Zambia because that is obviously the country from which we hail. If we have copper, for instance, international trade allows us to buy that copper, to sell off that to other nations in exchange either for money or other commodities that the country may need. So it is generally the buying and selling of goods between nations.
Okay. Over the years and in your research and studies, how balanced has this been, let's say, in the past, let's talk about 10, 20 years? Can we say it has been a balanced situation in the way international trade has been conducted, particularly in relation to Africa?
Nathan, right. One thing that we need to understand, and always when I'm giving my lectures, I always make reference to history because a lot that happened in history sort of dictated where we are today. If we look at history and how international trade came into being, number one, we're looking at it from as far back as during the slave trade era. And we're looking at it from the point where Africa was literally the resource pool for a lot of raw materials, which the international community came to trade. And when I say trade, I've put inverted commas on it, because what was happening there is that a lot of raw materials were leaving Africa, but not for the equivalent for what they were actually worth. So the idea that it has developed with, obviously, is this, that a lot of raw materials left our continent, but the equivalent was not coming back in. Number one, we're looking at issues where our people weren't so knowledgeable about the worth of the natural resource that was in Africa. And so if the international community came with things like, I don't know, soap or dyes or basic things which seemed attractive to the eye, other than a diamond that at that time nobody ever really knew the value, but because the international community knew, it seemed like, you know, it's just something else and we'll give you this in exchange. So when you look at it historically, it hasn't been balanced, and to some extent that trend has continued to trickle through even now, because I can give you an example. There's a story I heard of in Zimbabwe where back in the day, an owner of a farm was actually harvesting diamonds on his farm. And he instructed his farmers and says, no, go and find me these stones and bring them there for my fish. He had a fish tank. And his idea was to put to his servants, he said those stones were to put in the fish tank because they were good for his fish. Essentially, those were diamonds, and he was harvesting a whole lot. So you can see as well that lack of proper knowledge on the part of our people made it impossible for them to bargain on an equal stand, because number one, we weren't very knowledgeable about the things that we had in our backyard. And so, like I was saying, that trend has continued to manifest even today, even though it's in a formalistic manner. I'll give you an example. Most of the diamonds that are harvested across Africa, now the arrangements have changed, but you find them being sold in Kimberley, for instance. I haven't heard of any well-doing trade arrangement where African countries are trading in their own raw material, but more so, we rather send it outside Africa, and the trade arrangements there of the nation is not privy to. So in answer to your question, it hasn't been balanced, and I can say that this is one of the reasons that it has affected, for instance, regional trade agreements. It has affected the confidence that the people have in the government, because it's not so much a lack of resource, but a lack of the management thereof. So I hope that's just...
Yes, it does. And
for
you said yes, you've addressed it amicably and articulated very well. It brings me to the point that, and I mentioned this to you, Stacy, when you and I talked before I let my other colleagues, whatever contributions they want to, whatever angle they want to come in, those that have called in, Dr. Patrick and everybody, there's something that really, in view of what you have just outlined, why do we insist on trading with the U.S.? What is it? What? It's so far away. What's up with that?
Right. Again, I will have to refer to history, because history has continued to perpetuate. Sometimes it's a bit difficult to get out of this trade agreement, but I'll explain what I mean. When you look at Africa historically, and when there was colonialism and slave trade and all of that, there were a lot of arrangements that were entered into by the international community and our government. And some of these arrangements were, for instance, give us X and we'll give you ammunition to fight for your independence, for instance, or we'll support you at the UN or whatever the case may be. And the thing that has been a problem with that is that, the bargaining field was not equal. Our counterparts were more knowledgeable, and they could see the bigger picture. They knew that things would get to where they are today. And so they safeguarded themselves in terms of being preferred partners for certain African countries. And I can tell you, some of the trends that we're seeing in Africa is as a result of such historical arrangements that were made even before most of the African continents got independence. So now, over 50% of those arrangements have continued to trickle through history. But the other 50% could possibly be because, you see, the thing about free trade is that it allows sovereign states whomever it wants. But behind that, we have to realize that it is not so much government that is trading. It's actually the private sector who is represented by government. So at the end of the day, those private sector also have preferences or already existing markets with these international people in such a way that when we formalize something, for instance, in the form of a trade agreement, there's already been ongoing business that has been happening since time immemorial. So it's just really formalizing everything that has been happening in history, except now it's in a document which we call legal. So, those are some of the contributing factors.
You see, one of the things that you have highlighted here, and let me keep Dr. Patrick and my colleague Roger here, and Dr. Kasonso's mics open, Matilda too, and everybody. If you need to come in, Dr. Kasonso, Dr. Patrick, Roger, you can just let me know as we go along with the discussion. What you have just highlighted is that the government does the agreements or the negotiations, and it's actually the private sector that does the actual trading and goes through with the things that are agreed upon. This is your area of expertise and qualification. You are a lawyer in these things. Is the private sector represented at the negotiating table? If yes, do they really have a voice? If no, why not?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Obviously, the trend is different with different countries. But like I mentioned, I think the last time we spoke, I've been in Namibia now close to 10 years and obviously a bit more involved in the ins and outs thereof. I can give a general comment on Zambia because obviously that's my country of birth. But what I can tell you is the following. There's been generally across the board, there's been an inadequate representation of the private sector when it comes to inputting into policy and negotiations. Before we even get to a point that we can negotiate with another country, we have to realize that our internal affairs have to be in check. There has to be a proper form of communication. There has to be a relationship between the government and the private sector. And so a lot of these institutions are put in place in order to facilitate that. I'll give you an example. Here in Namibia, there's what they call the Namibia Trade Forum. What that agency's job is to be the dialogue, the go-between between government and private sector and represent the views of the private sector to a government level where they have to import into policy, et cetera. Zambia, I think, has the ZDA, if I'm not mistaken. And the idea, the principle for which they're established is to really be the facilitator of communication between government and the private sector. So theoretically, yes, if we look at the availability of these institutions, they are there. But now there's two approaches to this. We can look at it in terms of, yes, the institutions are there, but are they implementing the purpose for which they were created? You see, in as much as all these institutions are there, their job is to really be the advisory voice to government and say, look, this thing that we're negotiating, our stand is ABCD, our people are involved in this business, will be affected in this and this manner. At the end of the day, you have to remember that regional trade agreements are also a political nature. So you can say there is, I don't want to say adequate representation, it's there, but whether it's achieving the purpose thereof is another question altogether. And I feel that one of the ways that we need to move forward as Africa is to allow the private sector a bigger voice, because essentially that is who dictates how our markets and our economies move, because they're the ones that are on the ground. And I can remember in one accident where the private sector said, you know what, we've been telling you once too many times that this is what's going on, but it doesn't seem like the law is in our favor. We're going to go ahead and carry on and do things like we want. But at the end of the day, and as much as that may be the attitude, those legal instruments are binding on them also, because they happen to be in those territories that sign as member states of those agreements. So in answer to your question, the representation is there, but I'm skeptical to say that it's adequate.
Excellent. You're listening to Zambia Block Talk Radio. Our special feature this morning, we are discussing international and regional trade agreements, and our guest is Stacy Sousa, an international trade lawyer by qualification. She's also enrolled as a PhD candidate student, and she's our guest today. Before I let Dr. Patrick come in here, here's my other concern, Stacy, which I have observed. Let's talk about, I don't know what they call it now, okay? All I don't know, is ECOWAS still there? is the West African Economic whatever, is it still there?
Eastern Africa. I tell you what. Last year, about August, so I don't know if you heard about it in the media, the African states from about, the African leaders from about member states went to Egypt, if I'm not mistaken, to sign what they called the tripartite free trade area. Now,
okay.
That tripartite free trade area was basically trying to merge ECOWAS trading blocks and trying to merge it into a tripartite, being three, obviously, ECOWAS, COMESA, and SADC, and create
yes.
a free trade area within that region and for those 26 member countries. And some of the reasons were that, obviously, the effectiveness of those regions singularly was not as per what was envisaged in the principles, or rather in the preambles of those documents. ECOWAS being mm-hmm. an example. The failure of the implementation thereof is what sort of propelled or encouraged the leaders in that region to negotiate for this tripartite free trade area. So it was signed last year, August, and I can tell you because obviously to some extent it is public knowledge. But
mm-hmm.
that signing was ailing in a number of ways because, you see, when negotiations are started as to the signing of a free trade agreement or a regional trade agreement, whatever the case may be, there's the economic principles or the economic goals as well as the political. You've got to understand that all the time, there's always a benefit politically to assigning to some of these regional trade agreements because it shows, you know, spirit of Ubuntu, we're working together, and it looks nice and pretty to the outside world. But the implementation thereof is what actually counts. So last year, that TFTA was signed, but I can call it legally, you can call it a hollow document, because it had the general framework in terms of institutions and the aims and the goals that it wanted. But when it came to the actual crucial things, for instance, rules of origin, market access, negotiating principles, all of those things were things that were lacking. And because politically they had set a date to say we have to sign by X date of August, they had to sign
mm-hmm.
it, lest it looked like they weren't strong enough to execute it. But actually, they signed a hollow agreement because you cannot really draw much from it to allow you as a member state execute the provisions thereof. So it's there, but it's not there. if I can
say. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
wow.
After the failure of the I can't call it failure because what they did with the TFTA is that they put in there a build-in agenda. What a build-in agenda does is create provision to say, even after we've signed it, we can build in as we go along. So bring in those principles which we didn't negotiate from day one. But the problem with that is you've already officially said this agreement is binding, and so it's almost like you're renegotiating in reverse because you want to build in those things that weren't put in there. And obviously it makes the execution and the implementation process longer because instead
mm-hmm.
of extending the date until it's a complete agreement, you rather sign it for political reasons and yet that allow you to implement that provision they're lacking. So in as much as there's that going on, there's now talk of a continental free trade area. By continent, I mean Africa. The talks have begun in as much as we haven't finished with the TFTA. So, yes, it's there, but, yeah.
Yeah, let me...
A toothless dog, if I may call it that.
She brings a very important aspect here. I saw that article, I'm well aware of the signing they did in Cairo, and some
mm-hmm.
of the questions which were being asked, some of the complaints are that number one, we have ECOWAS, ECOWAS is South Africa, the West African one, but the one we have
yes.
COMESA in
yeah.
In Zambia, the Southern African,
is
dysfunctional. I don't know what it does. I don't know when they signed this document. It can barely deliver. Today you go to the border between Namibia, Zambia and Zimbabwe. You'll be there at the border for 2 weeks. So what are all these things doing, and then you want tomorrow and say, okay, let's now sign the entire Africa, when the regional ones are dysfunctional, they are not working. It doesn't make any sense. Having said that, we have two good ones. The East African one, where Kenya and Uganda and Tanzania belong, is quite functional. It is very, very functional. ECOWAS, I'm hearing a lot of good things about that one. To our dear sister here, our question is, how do we make our COMESA start to function? To those who are listening to Zambia, this thing is long overdue.
Right. I'm trying to down or rather streamline my answer, but I can give you generally. You're right in saying that in as much as governments are now seeming compelled to sign all these other bigger agreements, yet the smaller ones are not working, is almost, you know, irrelevant, because then if the smaller part is not working, how will the big one work?
Mm-hmm.
I can give you a general comment in terms of the general need to streamline regional trade agreements. You see, there's this thing called the spaghetti bowl of trade agreements. Spaghetti bowl is literally what it is. The spaghetti is so coiled because it means one country is a member state of one regional agreement, and then the other, and then they have preferred markets with it. It becomes almost like a spaghetti bowl, because Zambia will be, for instance, in COMESA, in SADC, and now TFTA, and now Continental Free Trade Area. So that's what it means by spaghetti bowl, is that you belong to so many other regional trade agreements. It's almost hard for you to zero in on what's important. So in answer to your question, number one is we need to streamline the existing regional trade agreements, COMESA being one of them. I feel like generally, for the regional trade agreements, we need to go back to the drawing board.
Mm-hmm.
We need to go back and analyze those hopes and dreams we were hoping to achieve with that instrument, and actually say, are we actually achieving this? Is there a need for it to continue? Because like you said, the idea with all of these trade arrangements is to make the trade of trading easily and more able to flow. For instance, before these regional trade agreements, there were so many trade barriers in terms of import taxes, sanitary requirements, etc. The range is wide. So what essentially these agreements try to do is to make trading for those member countries easier and to remove them where possible. So if, for instance, COMESA is not achieving those principles for which it was established in the first place, then we need to go back to the drawing board and decide what to do. I can tell you clearly, now there's been issues of SACU. SACU is the Southern African Customs Union. And there's actually been talk about certain member states pulling out. But obviously, because there's an issue of revenue, some economies are actually sustained from the revenue pool of SACU. You sort of are caught between a rock and a hard place, because you're thinking, okay, if I come out, then the revenue is gone and this is gone. You know, it's not always just a hard and fast decision that you can make. Sometimes to the layman, it may seem like, you know, it's easy for us to judge and say it's not working, so get out of it. But like I mentioned, to a regional trade agreement, there's different facets. There's the economic side, there's the social side, there's the professional side, and obviously the political side. But I think that it's time we actually unveiled all of those masks and, you know, coverings to make it seem like it's working and just be real. If we need to go back to the drawing board and renegotiate or reestablish some of these things, then so be it. So like I said, I'll give you a general answer, is we need to streamline what COMESA is doing. Remember, I think a personal view of mine is that some of these trade arrangements, they're too broad. There's too many things to zero in on. There's too many things to deal with, to such an extent that when it comes to the actual implementing, the member states are overwhelmed with what to do. Because remember, before member states sign on to these regional trade agreements, they're a sovereign state by themselves. They've been conducting their own affairs in the way that they deem fit. And so when they assign to a regional trade agreement, it's sort of absolve some of their sovereignty because they now have to make principles towards the common goal of that regional agreement rather than their needs as a member state singularly. So there's always those conflicting views, but I feel that all of those reasons are justifications only to a certain extent, because when it really comes to it, we just need to ask ourselves, is this working and is it not? If not, why? If we need to remove some provisions that are making the implementation of COMESA difficult, then we need to do that. But not doing that avails us or opens us up to being member states of COMESA when we're actually not implementing, defeating the purpose altogether. So,
Stacey,
I can give
just
you an example. In most of these regional trade agreements, in most of these regional trade agreements, there's always an agenda for industrialization. And that's what most African states are trying to do right now, is to increase their industrialization so they're able to export more and they're able to sustain their economies based on what they're able to produce. But the problem is that the trend since history has always been for us to extract the raw materials and send them out. What has that done? We haven't prepared ourselves in terms of making sure that there's infrastructure and trade facilitation for those commodities. So now it's like we're, trying to touch here and there to put our house in order and to catch up with the international markets. Yet they've been doing it since time immemorial. Their industries are set up because they're the ones that have been processing what they've been taking from us. So another answer to your question is that we need to improve on the infrastructure in African countries. There is nothing to sustain us in terms of removing something from the ground, processing it, and exporting it as a finished product. And that's why now there's been a lot of talk about value addition and global value chains, etc. Because up until a few years ago, Africa has been sleeping by exporting raw materials just as they are, and yet tomorrow we import the same thing back into the country when actually we had it in our backyard. So in answer to your question, we need to get back to the drawing board and zero in on those things that we know are achievable. The others that are not working, those regional agreements need to find a way of either cutting them off or really streamlining and saying, if we're going to do it, how are we going to do it? Number two, we need to improve on our infrastructure, our road network, our market access, because those are the things that the private sector complains of. I'm not able, a little farmer somewhere in the back of a village, can they get their product easily to town? But they can't because the road network is in a mess. Number two, when I get to that town, I'm competing with from other countries. How am I even going to start to compete? Because I'm just looking at small scale and maybe my cost is higher because I've just started. So number one, we need to get back to the drawing board and decide on those things that we need to work on. Number two, we need to improve our infrastructure and market access.
Excellent. Stacey, two questions that I want to ask you before I let Dr. Patrick and Dr. Kasonso come in, and anybody else wants to come in here.
Okay.
What are some of the things we can point to that we can say have been commercial successes?
I can tell you. I've had to think about that one. I can tell you generally from its inception until now, the things that I can really point to is most probably improvement of market access, because I can give you an example in Zambia. It's not as it should be, but it's better than it was. Because remember, when by the time, for instance, Zambia signed to COMESA, we were still dealing with a closed market and we weren't so open to the world. But obviously, with COMESA now, we're able to trade freely with maybe DRC, South Africa. It was easier for products even from Zambia to go into these countries. And I can tell you now, even if you go to COMESA market itself in Zambia, you see a lot of products that are not from Zambia. And speaking from an assumption point, I would assume that Zambian products are also out there, because obviously it requires one to actually be present to see whether Zambia is benefiting by being able to export to those markets. So generally, I can say market access. the second thing is maybe the ease of people to move between borders without so mm-hmm. much restriction, although that's also to a certain level and degree, because you see, with trade agreements, there's always provisions on ease of move of people, but as well as professionals. By professionals, I mean, I'm trying to remember, there's an arrangement between Zimbabwe and Namibia as to the ease of moving professionals. Because remember now, Zimbabwe is obviously in a situation where most of its professionals are leaving the country, obviously for greener pastures. And now,
yes.
I can give you an example. For instance, in Namibia, yes. with the Engineering Council of Namibia, they're trying to negotiate an arrangement where the qualifications in Zimbabwe will hold the same water here in Namibia, although now you're still required to sit for exams and you still need to be certified, etc. So generally, those are the two things I can point at: market access and the ease of people moving from to and from the member states of those countries. And the fact
okay.
that I could raise those two without telling you the benefits in terms of the real purpose for COMESA already presents a problem, because market access is an important tool, but when you're dealing with the regional trade agreements, the benefits override something as general as market access.
Okay, good. Dr. Kasonso, did you have a comment or a question?
Yes, I have some comments. It's a very interesting discussion, and I like some of the points that Stacey has brought out, and I wanted to just make a few comments here. The International Trade actually predates the slave trade. The King Solomon of the Bible was a shrewd international business player who accumulated lots of wealth
okay.
that has not yet been surpassed at the personal level. And then the sale and purchase of slaves during the trade triangle was an evolution in the nature of international trade. It was a form of an innovation in the nature of products of exchange, with the advent to globalize. And with that said, the last 40 years, global trade is driven by internet and the access to, advanced technologies that makes a marketplace kind of global. That in
mm-hmm.
itself
mm-hmm.
is a significant blow to the regional economic organizations, because they kind of put the weakest mm-hmm. economies together that cannot compete in the global marketplace. The U.S. also is a dominant player in the global economy, and the U.S. dollar is the most dominant currency of exchange
mm-hmm.
amongst the world's reserve
mm-hmm.
currencies. So
mm-hmm.
you can't really do business without the United States. I was just reading the Reserve Treasury report that the United States and its people owns about half of the world's equity in terms of business investment around the world. And Africa, for more than 500 years, has been a place to take from in terms of economic resources. The global economy has been built on African human and natural resources for decades. In fact, I take the view that Africa contains a giant ore from Cape to Cairo, from hundreds of years of mining and exploitation. And thank God that we don't have earthquakes in our villages. African resource suppliers must benefit from the dominant players if they are doing business with them. The U.S. is not a very difficult country to do business with. Just that the level of business has risen to a level of leadership over the last 200 years. So in order for countries in Africa to do business with the U.S. properly, they need to do two things. The first one, I think, is first to raise the standards in terms of the products of exchange, because
mm-hmm.
standards are a disqualifier to put those products on the shelves in the U.S., because the food we eat here in the United States has got certain standards that they have to pass. Even here in the United States, you can't make a substandard product and hope that
mm-hmm.
you will sell it. So the African traders have mm-hmm. to raise the standard in that. And the second thing that is needed is to increase the amount of foreign direct investment as partners or corporate players to enhance the
mm-hmm.
flow of capital and exchange of goods between countries. The global business platform is also
mm-hmm.
competence-driven, which means that in order only the fittest survive. It's an arena for superior products, mm-hmm. excellent services, and resources in high demand for worldwide use. So the regional economic groupings struggle because they put insignificant business players together. They are fellowships of the poor, and they cannot increase capacity to sustain global competition. So that is where
Dr. Kasonso, before you, I know you are, what's the word, offloading or downloading a lot of things. Let me find out if Stacey wants to sort of comment or respond to some of the things you have raised before I switch to Dr. Patrick to talk about the Africa regional market doing business with America. You wanted to comment on something, Stacey?
Let me just give us a brief few comments. I absolutely agree with Dr. Kasonso in that the two things that Africa also needs to focus on is the quality of the products that they produce, as well as foreign direct investment. But in mm-hmm. answer to point number one, it speaks to what I raised as a way forward for Africa is our need to improve infrastructure. By infrastructure, I mean those processes and those industries that are relevant or rather important to ensure that Africa improves the types of products that it produces. Because without infrastructure, we cannot process, we cannot value add, we cannot package properly. It all narrows back down to infrastructure. And that's why, for me, it's an important thing for Africa to put in place, because all of these things that we're exporting are either in their raw form or not good enough or semi-processed. But if we as Africa, as Zambia as a nation, as whichever African state, focus on those, investing in those required in order to add value to our products, obviously what we're producing becomes more competitive on the worldwide sector, because as Dr. Kasonso rightly pointed out, the world requires a certain standard. That is just the normal flow of business. So in answer to, or rather in addition to his need for Africa to improve its quality, yes, that's an important thing to do, but it's not possible without our need to improve our infrastructure, because that infrastructure is that which will allow us to add value to our products in a way that actually makes them attractive. And then in response to the foreign direct investment, I can't say I'm all for it, but also, as Africa, we need to be careful as to how much investment we're allowing in, because sometimes we run the risk of allowing too much FDI without any, mm-hmm. there's no urgency on our own people to invest in those industries because somebody else from China is doing it. So in as much as FDI is important, there must be a quota system that balances to an extent that the local industry is also not suffering and the ability for our own people to enter those markets is not being frustrated because there's too many FDIs. So those are my initial comments about that.
Okay, excellent. Dr. Patrick, I've always been of the notion, based on a lot of discussions that we've had here, it's not easy for the African countries to do business with America. I don't know what your comment on that is, and you can also just respond from whichever way you want to come in, based on what Stacey, Dr. Kasonso, and the Roger have raised.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. Thank you, Nathan. I would like to just begin by thanking Stacey for bringing the historical perspective to what she's doing. Any international lawyer that comes to the table without bringing a historical perspective, that individual is speaking in a vacuum. A person is just like what Santiago said,
mm-hmm.
a person who do not remember their history is doomed to repeat it. So I was very pleased when Stacey prefaced her presentation with knowing about your history before you can engage in your economics or in any legal pursuit or any legal action that you take. Secondly, what we've been talking about is what we've covered throughout in Zambia Blog Talk Radio. If you will recall, I said we must, we being the diaspora and African countries, and this would include ECOWAS, it would include SADC, it would include AMIS. We need to discontinue and stop playing checkers and start playing chess. The international game that's being played throughout the global community is checkers. We talk about, or many of us in the community talk about business profiles. We need to stop talking about business profiles and start talking about and when Stacy referenced about infrastructure building and it must be undertaken first, it is so true because infrastructure dictates the standards. When we talk about international standards, we're talking about AGOA. If you're talking about the United States, you're talking about AGOA. Every country, based and starting back from the Uruguay round, every country with the World Trade Organization, every country has lowered their technical barriers to trade. But what they've maintained was their sanitary, phytosanitary standards, meaning that you must meet each country's standards in order to engage in the economic community. So what I would hope for, and I would plead for all the listeners on Zambia Blog Talk Radio, is to encourage COMESA, ECOWAS, SADC to engage Stacy, and I hope I'm not putting you on the spot, Stacy, but engage Stacy as a consultant and advisor to look at the legal paperwork and the trade agreement that's being promulgated, because there is a legal difference between will, shall, and may, and Stacy has the legal
absolutely.
So therefore, all listeners to Zambia Blog Talk Radio, engage someone like Stacy to be on the advisory board to look at those trade agreements.
Excellent. Stacy?
So much for that comment. A bit of a surprise, but I would tell you that everything that you have said is things that I have thought about and is things that I absolutely agree with. And it's interesting to see that you have taken it out on a broader base, because to my mind, those are things that everything that I've spoken about today is pretty much a pronunciation of the things that I've observed over the number of years. And to hear you say that this is advice that government needs is such an honor and a blessing. But I can tell you as well that the fact that it comes so easily and generally for me to come to those deductions sort of questions what's been going on with our government, because I don't think it requires, you know, a genius to come up with these conclusions. So that means that basically we really need to get back to the drawing board and put emphasis on those things that matter, because the knowledge and the information is already out there. But how we get that knowledge and information and process it into something that helps us is where our governments are lacking. So thank you very much for that comment. I'm absolutely humbled and honored by it.
You're very much welcome.
We shall go that route and try to see in which ways we can contribute, like we were discussing in our earlier segment about what the diaspora can bring to the table. As we're coming to conclude, let me bring in my friend here from, is it South or North Carolina, Aka? Aka?
North Carolina.
Oh, North Carolina. Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right. My colleague, Masheka Akashambatwa here, Richard, whichever name you want to use, from North Carolina. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, moderator. Thank you, Stacy, for those very varied points that you have been propagating so far, and all the other commentators that have actually made similar valuable contributions. I thought this was an important discussion that you had. I usually don't join in because I'm working or I'm doing something, you know, weekends. But I thought when you started discussing international trade vis-a-vis Africa and its engagement in the global economy and trade, I thought it was important, it's worthwhile listening to, and it was indeed worthwhile listening to these valuable contributions. I want to quickly state that the points that was raised about Africa's, indeed commerce as a region, its role and its efficiencies and inefficiencies. I want to state that in as much as they do have a lot of challenges developing and bringing together various regions and countries together in the COMESA region, there has been a lot of successes that COMESA actually has scored over the past years. And I mean, from 2000 to about 2014, COMESA facilitated over $45 billion in trade between the member states, and there's been a lot of commercial institutional successes that we can actually talk about, a lot of them, and one notable one is the Commercial Competition Commission, which handled and approved within 12 months of its existence the $13 billion of cross-border mergers and acquisitions. So if you begin to look at the details and the things that COMESA has been implementing, yes, there's been a lot of challenges, but there's been a lot of successes as well. In my own opinion, I think COMESA is one successful regional integration project, you know, which is unrivaled by the East Africans. There's no other one on the African continent to talk about. ECOWAS is more political integration. And all those things, but as you said, there's been challenges, and one of the challenges is not. I personally do not want to actually talk about the issue of quality vis-a-vis trading with United States, because quality, like the previous speaker just said, quality has just been used as one of the trade restriction policy to restrict the flooding in of imported cheaper goods that have similar qualities as U.S. I live in the U.S.
Arthur, we are running out of time.
Right.
Let's respond to what you have said, yeah.
Okay. Let me just run this comment on quality right quick, moderator. If you pick a cookie in a retail store in USA and pick it some more in ShopRite, Zambia, the qualities are the same. And this goes to all other products. Africa can meet the quality. It's a trade restrictions that we, at political level, that we must, as Africans and as markets, must face. Thank you.
Right. Thank you so very much for those comments. And I will agree with you that COMESA has had successes. And if you noted on my comment on success, on COMESA as a whole, was the fact that it has been improved. So those amounts of billions that were raised were primarily because there was an improvement in market access, which is something I highlighted. So I'm glad we agree on that, as well as the institutional framework thereof. I would like, however, for COMESA to continue improving, especially on its institutional and executional part, because all these things are things that have happened over the years, but I feel like moving forward, there's much more that COMESA can achieve, because the baseline is there. It's easier for it to actually improve and perfect those processes that happen in COMESA. So yes, number one, market access has been brilliant when it comes to COMESA, obviously relating to the amount of money that you mentioned. But I feel like in as much as there's those successes, they shouldn't make us comfortable and overcloud that which we need to do moving forward. And then in terms of quality, I choose to look at it in two ways. You're right in saying that sometimes it's used as a trade barrier for African products to reach the international market. That be that as it may, I feel like it's also a chance for our own industries to improve and come up to par with what we need to trade, because in as much, we can't always cry foul. We can't always say it's a trade. In some instances, yes, it's a trade restriction. But where we need to, as African countries, go back to the drawing board to ensure that what we send out is of quality, I absolutely feel that that's something we need to do. So yes, I agree with you. Sometimes it is a trade barrier, but other times it's a way or an opportunity for our own people to improve that which they produce to make them more competitive.
Excellent. As we conclude here, just an announcement to all Dallas residents. Just want to let you know that let's support our Zambian professionals and whatever they are doing. Bobo Nkosha, also known as Dorica, will be in Dallas, Texas, next Saturday, February 27th. Tickets are available. You can call 469-254-2812. So Bob will be in town. Tonight is in Connecticut. You can find that information by looking at his Facebook page, Bobo Nkosha. Stacey, we thank you for taking the time to discuss these issues with us. As we conclude, my final question to you is, therefore, what is the way forward for Africa to increase and improve trade amongst ourselves? And what role do you think we play as a diaspora in this situation?
Okay, I'll address it by answering your first question. Us Africans or us Zambians that are in the diaspora are exposed to better ways of doing business, are exposed to established industries that our countries can learn from. So in terms of us being in the diaspora, it's not enough to say, oh, I'm in the States and I'm doing ABCD. At the end of the day, us being in the diaspora, we need to understand our role in being in the diaspora in terms of benefit for our country. That which we learn in the places where we are today absolutely needs to go back to our countries to help us improve. We're not in the diaspora because it's a pretty thing to look at out there, but we're in the diaspora so that we learn processes and ways of doing business that our countries may not be exposed to and actually engage government on ways of improving. So that's our role as the people in the diaspora. In terms of what Africa can do, I will go back to my initial statement. Number one, improve our infrastructure, improve our market access, and strengthen our own domestic industries. Africa has been open and prone to a lot of investors with inverted commas coming in and dictating what we do with our own raw materials. But that won't happen if we ourselves as separate countries are already established and know our place and role to play in terms of those raw materials. The only reason people come in is because they see a niche, they see an opening that they come in and they say, members of our country step up and say, we want to actually be the deciding people in terms of our economy, then that's what's going to happen. So we need to step up to the plate. It's not enough for us to point fingers at government, but we as people need to also step up to the plate and engage with government and see how best to manage our country to make them the success that I know that they should be. So again, thank you so very much for having me. The 1 hour seems long before you started, but once you're in it, it almost flies by. But thank you so very much.
That's true. Stacey, your input has been very informative and educative. On behalf of the Zambia Block Talk Radio team and family, we appreciate you taking the time to be with us. We shall definitely be calling upon you as time goes by and when we need your input. Ladies and gentlemen, that was our show today. Next week, we'll be having guests from We Create. I think Stacey is aware, is familiar with We Create. This is a Women Revolutionizing the World. It's an organization spread across Africa, designed to empower women with entrepreneurship. Thank you, everybody, and have a good weekend.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Please enter the number you wish to call.
Your blessings are ever true, and this I never knew, until somebody came and told me that you are the God who heals, and I'm Cause I've been saying